The Oregon DMV has become a battlefront in the controversy over illegal immigrants. Welcome to KLCC Sunday at Noon. I'm Claude Offenbacher.
And I'm Andrew Bartholomew. Large rallies at the Capitol in Salem both last month and last week have protested the denial of driver's licenses to illegal immigrants.
We'll get David House's take on this issue and on other motor vehicle matters. David is the official spokesman for the DMV and our guest today.
We'll also hear from Scott Roeder of VITA, who's campaigning against secrecy involved when whistleblowers report bad drivers for retesting.
We'll take your calls and close with a challenge. Six questions from the driver's written test.
First, this update from NPR News. You're tuned to Sunday at Noon on KLCC. Scott Roeder recently took the DMV vision test and thought he was good to continue driving Oregon's roads. Roeder, a 56-year-old traveling appliance repairman with more than 280,000 miles on one of his two pickups, often commutes home to VITA from Eugene, Springfield after midnight. In December, someone convinced the DMV he needs to retake all his driving tests or turn in his license. The DMV refused Roeder a copy of the accusatory report, saying he could obtain it only through a hearing or lawsuit. Roeder, in conversation with Claude, picks up the story.
On December 20th, or shortly after that date, I received a letter saying that DMV had received a complaint, a report of my driving, and they were questioning whether I was a safe driver and that they're requiring me to retest and reexamine.
How long had you been a driver?
40 years.
And what was your driving record, and do you think it was a factor in all of this?
I do think it might be a factor because my driving record has tickets on it, but nothing on my driving record indicates that I do not have the ability to drive safely, which is the principle under which they're required to review somebody's driving for a retest. Nothing on my record in the way of tickets indicates I don't have the ability to drive safely.
And the DMV nevertheless told you you'd need to retake your written, driving, and vision tests within 60 days or turn in your license.
Yes, by February the 20th, I'm supposed to complete all these tests. And in July, I just passed the vision test and got a driver's license renewed.
And who had called your driving into question?
Well, the letter didn't say, and that's what got my level of anger up. It said nothing about where this report or complaint of my driving came from.
Were you told why you couldn't be told?
Numerous times I was told it's confidential and they can't tell me. This program of what they refer to as non-mandatory reporting of instances of alleged unsafe driving has been going on for 20-odd years, since 1987, and they accumulate anonymous reports at the rate of 2,000 average a year for 20 years. We have 40,000 secret files being maintained at the DMV about Oregon drivers. I frankly don't see why any report should be kept secret. This is not the Homeland Security or the CIA. There's no reason for secrecy.
Well, apparently there was concern on their part about protecting family members or other citizens.
Protecting them from what, though, Claude? What is somebody going to do if their driving is being called into question? They're going to hire a hitman? I don't think so.
The other thought was that they would be discouraging people from reporting errant drivers.
Well, and they rightly should be. Are we trying to build a nation of weasels who go around snitching on each other privately? Or do we want people who actually have a legitimate complaint or concern to openly report? And I just think most folks have no problem reporting openly.
We're speaking with Scott Roeder of VITA, who has been asked to retake his driving test and who has questioned the manner in which his name was reported and brought to the attention of officials. Scott, have you heard from others who have been affected in the same way that you have?
I've had several, probably half a dozen calls about this from different people. It's just not me. Well, you'd expect that. There are 40,000 secret files here over 20 years. This has been going on until the DMV claimed that I just brought it to their attention.
The Register Guard on the 30th, again, an article by David Steves, made reference to the fact that there's been some partial closure of the situation. Could you tell us about that?
They're willing to make those reports generated by cops available with just a request for public information about your file. But that's 50% only. There's another 50% or 20,000 secret files that don't originate with law enforcement, that come from family members and friends, doctors and healthcare providers, that come from, believe it or not, just someone on the street. Those reports should be dealt with at the same time. There's no reason to keep these reports confidential. If we have these reports, they can be fabricated, unsubstantiated accounts. There are no safeguards, although the DMV claims that there are some. There are no safeguards to keep this anonymous reporting from turning into abuse.
Scott Roeder of VITA, in conversation with Claude, he's taken on the DMV over denying him the name of the person that accused him of erratic driving, requiring him to retake his driving test. To comment on Scott's situation or to share your own DMV-related quandary, you can reach us now at 463-5522 in Eugene, Springfield, or at 800-922-3682.
Oregon DMV spokesman David House is our guest. And David, I have to give you a chance to respond, if you'd like to Scott, who, by the way, is on the line, and I think he'll have a little coda to put on to that piece, but we'd like to hear from you on that, too.
Sure. What Scott's talking about is what we call the non-mandatory reports. That's as opposed to the mandatory reports that are, physicians in Oregon are required to provide to DMV if somebody has some kind of medical issue that makes them unsafe behind the wheel. When the medical requirement was revised back between 2001 and 2003, they also revised the administrative rules. And for some reason, and I'm not sure why, the piece that eliminated law enforcement from the confidentiality option was removed from that. And Scott Roeder's case brought us that to our attention. And so we started the administrative rules process to put it back the way it had been for the previous 15 years. Because there's no reason to make law enforcement have the option of confidentiality.
So you're saying that you're moving to a situation where the person who reports someone for errant driving that leads to his having to retake the driving test would always be known by the person who's affected by that report?
No. If it's other than law enforcement, those people have the option of checking a box that says, please keep my name confidential. Of course, that confidentiality only extends up to the point where there's any kind of a legal proceeding, such as an administrative hearing or a lawsuit.
David, has DMV secured a legal opinion on maintaining non-police reporting confidential?
Yes, we have lawyers at the Department of Justice, and I think they agreed with us. Let's just put it back the way it was the previous 15 years.
But how does this square with the constitutional right of being able to face one's accuser to assure such accusations are neither false nor malicious?
Because we've placed safeguards and a chance to appeal the decision through administrative hearing. Essentially, you can't file an anonymous report. It has to be you have to identify yourself, and you have to identify the driver. You can't just look at a license plate and turn that person in. We won't accept anything like that. And you have to name specific driving observations that you've made that are unsafe before we'll even consider the report.
Well, Scott is with us, Scott Roeder, who you heard from in this piece just now. And Scott, welcome to Sunday at Noon.
Yes, thank you for having me on. Hello, David.
Hello.
You're on, Scott, for anything you'd like to add to what you already have told me.
Well, I don't know where to begin. David sounds like a thoroughly nice gentleman, but he's entirely misguided. I didn't quite understand the response when your guest host there asked him whether he was going to maintain the secrecy level for reports not originating from law enforcement. That answer wasn't clear.
Well, David, you want to give us another quick take on that?
Yeah, the form that, say, a family member or a physician on a non-mandatory report has a box that you would check to request confidentiality. You don't have to request that. We're going to leave that the way it is for people who are not law enforcement.
Okay, well, can I say something, Claude?
Yeah, as long as you don't go too deeply into repeating what you've already said,
no,
Scott.
No. There are 7% of reports that originate from the DMV and the courts itself. Under what basis does David House think that those reports from officials of our government should be maintained secret? I claim they should be open, as well as reports from law officers. And as far as the family members, there is no reason to provide secrecy to family members, because what we're going to have here is a few people who don't want to confront their grandfather when most people would be willing to tell their grandfather to their face that they're beyond their safe driving years. And so we have, because of a few people every year who are non-confrontational, in other words, they hate to confront anybody about anything, we have now 20,000 more reports that are being claimed confidential and will not be available to the person they pertain to.
Okay, Scott. Well, thanks so much. You've made your points well, and we'll see how some of our listeners might respond to it. Thanks so much for the call.
Thank you.
One of our listeners is on the line to respond to it right now. Joan in Springfield. Welcome to Sunday at Noon.
Good afternoon. I am very much in favor of keeping my name anonymous if I report someone, because they, in all probability, know my car and my license number. And so they can identify me anyway. And if they are terribly upset about my telling someone that they repeatedly make illegal lane changes and endanger five or six cars behind them, they're quite likely to run you off the road as they are to say, oh my, ho-hum, forget them. No, they take aggressive action when they're displeased, and I would not like to have them hounding me.
Jonah, I missed your point. How would they know what your car and license plate number are?
If they got it from my name.
But they wouldn't get...
If they know who... If I'm identified...
Oh, I see.
Can,
I got it.
They can find out where I live, what my schedule is, what my Social Security number is, anything. You can pick up any of these things.
Sure, sure.
And they can do a great deal of damage.
Joan, thank you. We appreciate your call. And we'll take one more response here on what Scott Roeder had to tell us. And we go to Chris and Eugene. Chris, welcome to Sunday at Noon. Chris, are you there? Well, looks like we've lost Chris.
David, do you want to respond to anything you've heard over the last couple calls?
Well, sure. I actually, what Scott says is correct, that the purpose of that option for confidentiality is to protect just a very small percentage of the people. In fact, 50% of these non-mandatory reports come from law enforcement anyway, because they're out there particularly paying attention to driving behaviors. So, yeah, the question there is, should that confidentiality option continue? And there's two sides to that. And Scott and his side and other people, like your previous caller, if they participate in the lawmaking and administrative rulemaking process, then, you know, some consensus has got to come out of that, whether or not, you know, it's going to be yes or no, whether we continue that.
You know, when I heard Scott Roeder's story, the thing that caught my eye was this idea of having to retake the driver's test. I didn't even know that you really ever had to retake the test. How often does DMV require somebody to retake their driving test?
There's no reason to retake it unless you've been suspended for some reason or revoked, or if you've been through either the mandatory or non-mandatory reporting program. For example, let's say you've had an accident, a severe accident, and you were unable to drive. And at some point, they discover a treatment or a therapy that works, then you would need to restart the license application process. But, yeah, the other case would be in a retesting request such as this.
David, there's been considerable discussion at DMV of retesting older drivers before they're reissued a license. A member of my own family was still driving at age 90, though her awareness and reaction time and visual capacities were clearly diminished and almost got her killed at least once. Is there anything happening on this front?
Actually, that revision that accidentally took out the law enforcement exemption back in the early part of this decade addressed exactly that. It started out looking at the effect of aging on driving ability, and what emerged from that was a program we called a medically at-risk driver program that requires physicians to report any kind of incapacity, whether that's mental or physical or a combination of the two, or vision even, that makes someone unsafe to drive.
That presumes that they are seeing a doctor, and my wife hadn't needed to see a doctor for many years.
Yeah.
My mother, I'm sorry.
Your mother, right? That's correct. But most people do see a doctor if they have some kind of severe ailment, and that's what we're talking about. We're talking about something that's severe enough to affect their driving. Nothing is perfect. Nothing is absolutely airtight. But when this program that focuses on impairments rather than just age seems to be very effective.
We'll go from older drivers to brand new drivers. In 1999, Oregon passed a new graduating licensing system for teenage drivers. Has this been effective in cutting back on teenage driving accidents?
Absolutely. Within a couple of years, it was phased in between 2000 and 2002 because anyone who already had a license when they were 16 were grandfathered in. We saw double-digit decrease in fatal crashes where there's a 16 or 17-year-old behind the wheel in Oregon. And other states have seen similar results. So this is pretty much universal across the country now, these additional restrictions on drivers that are younger than 18.
I suppose I should have started with this, but David, can you talk about those additional restrictions?
Mm-hmm. For example, a driver is allowed to... Well, let me back up a bit. First, you've got to have your permit for a longer period if you're under 18 than you would when you're over 18. You also need to pass an additional set of questions in the knowledge test that are focused on driving safely. And then you have to get a minimum amount of experience behind the wheel, 50 hours, and take a traffic safety class approved by ODOT. Or, in lieu of the class, you could get another 50 hours behind the wheel before you can apply for your license. And after you get your license, then there's restrictions on what time of day you can drive and how many passengers that are not a member of your family you can have. The thinking there is that the real danger in that first 6 months of having a driver license is inexperience and distractions. And having your friends with you is a real serious distraction.
That's David House. He's a DMV spokesman. And it's our guest today. And we invite you to join our conversation by calling 463-5522 or 800-922-3682. We go to Nathan in Roseburg. Nathan, welcome to Sunday at Noon.
Nathan, are you there? Looks like we don't have Nathan.
All right, we'll go to PC in Crow. PC, welcome to Sunday at Noon.
Well, welcome. Thank you very much for having me.
Well, glad to have you on board.
Do I just get the... My point is, and what's really bothering me here, is if a person's required to retake this test, say they've been anonymously turned in, are they dealt with like a beginning driver? Do they just walk in and take the test, or do they have to make an appointment? Is the test score shared with them, or is this done in secrecy? And that's a question for Mr. House.
Thank you. David.
You can just walk in and take the knowledge test and the vision test, but you do need to make an appointment to take the behind-the-wheel test. And essentially, the bar is the same. The expectation is that you would be able to pass the knowledge, vision, and driving tests the same as you would as when you first qualified. And that requirement is the same for every driver in Oregon.
One of the callers that somehow didn't get through was Nathan in Roseburg, and the question he wanted to ask you, David, was, can road rage be reported?
Yes, actually, some law enforcement agencies, particularly the Oregon State Police, and in the Portland area recently, too, they've really looked at aggressive driving, and they see that there isn't a law specifically against aggressive driving, but there are laws against the kinds of behaviors that are associated with that, such as tailgating, careless driving, speeding, those kinds of things. And when you see those happening in a group with a particular driver, there is really a pattern of aggressive driving that you could call road rage.
David, DMV suspends driving privileges about 450,000 times a year. What are the principal reasons for doing so?
The most common forms of suspensions are from the courts. We have failure to appear and failure to comply. What that means is you got a ticket and you ignored it. You didn't go to the court, and even if you did went to the court, you didn't pay the fine. And that's an automatic suspension from the courts. And the other group that's rather large is what we call the Driver Improvement Program. If you get four tickets or a combination of tickets and preventable accidents in a two-year period, you'll get a suspension for 30 days. And we have drivers who get 10, 12 of these driver improvement suspensions in a single year because they get so many tickets. But that is a very tiny percentage of drivers.
Bob in Mackenzie Highway called us, probably on 800-922-3682. Bob, welcome to Sunday at Noon.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Glad to...
I think the central point that I'm really kind of asking is, when do we stop over-legislating people who can't, you know, when they buy coffee at McDonald's, they don't realize coffee is going to be hot. Even yourself, you had a 94-year-old mother that you didn't feel comfortable sitting down with and saying, Mom, I love you. I'll help you in any way I can. Take taxis if you need help with the fee. I'll drive you wherever you need to go, but you can't drive anymore.
Well, okay.
And correcting...
well, actually, there were a lot of attempts were made along those lines, but she insisted that she had a legitimate New York driver's license, and no one, including her son, was going to tell her whether she could drive or not.
I had a pretty tough mom myself, so I understand that. But why does the government need to be involved in that? Why is there an anonymous registry? And the person in question, I think his name is Scott, who has the issue that
that's
brought
right.
all this up.
That's his name.
Scott doesn't even know what behavior he engaged in that he is supposed to correct. What was the error of his ways? He hasn't even been informed what he did wrong. It's anonymous. It's secret. It's anti-American. Come on.
Hey,
we don't do that kind of stuff.
Well, I think Scott would agree with you 100%. Bob, are you calling us from the road?
I am, yes.
Okay, well, that raises another question that I'm going to ask David, but thank you so much. Appreciate the call. And that question is the DMV at all concerned with the frequency with which people are engaged with their phones or their pagers or who knows what while they're driving on our roads?
Let me address the other point about the retesting. I agree with the caller, and I agree with Scott Ritter on this. We're looking at a very small percentage of people that family members, for example, are reporting. And it is just for that. It's an option for those people who can't confront their parents or their relative or their best friend. It's not for everybody. The vast majority of older drivers, they give up their driving privileges voluntarily when they realize that they can't drive anymore. So these programs exist for that very small percentage of people that need this kind of they need a program that says, look, okay, I'm not going to tell you not to drive, but here's DMV, and there's a test that everybody has to be able to pass. So take that, and if you can't pass it, then you probably shouldn't be driving. It relieves that tension that you would have in your family, for example, but it also allows them to get that message that, whoa, maybe I shouldn't be driving. Maybe I'm not as good as I used to be. But anyway, back to distractions. Yes, driver distractions, that's a major factor in a lot of accidents. It's not as big as speeding or DUI, but it is a factor. And we've already seen in Oregon a new law that prevents teenagers, people under 18, from driving while using any kind of electronic communication device. We don't have a law for adults, but that's a question that's probably going to continue to surface because of we know that the impact of being distracted from driving for any reason, whether it's an intoxication or whether it's an electronic device, it's not a good thing.
Are we contributing to that by not telling drivers who we know are on the road and calling us to pull over and get off the road before they speak with us?
Maybe the guilt will have you change your ways.
Could happen.
David, I recall running across a study that suggested that driving while talking on a cell phone is actually found to be more dangerous than driving while intoxicated. Are you familiar with such studies? It makes this seem like a pretty important issue.
Yes, we have heard of studies where it equates the rate of accidents between DUI drivers and people on cell phones or other electronic devices. But again, the difficult parts about doing those studies is that when a lot of accident reports are based on the driver themselves, and they're not very forthcoming in admitting that they were on the phone when they had a crash. So it's not entirely reliable data. It's extrapolated. It's a guess in a lot of ways. But it's still, there is a pretty good correlation there, and it does make you suspect that there is a contribution to driver safety in distractions like a cell phone or a text messenger.
Apart from some of the questions that we've already dealt with, what are some of the other questions that are most frequently asked by drivers of the DMV, David?
The most frequent questions we get, and this goes back to our original topic here, is I'm unable to get a license because my hospital where I was born 80 years ago it's burned down. There are no records. Or I can't get into the Social Security office without ID, and I can't get ID without a Social Security number. And we've seen this already in the past, and we're going to see more of this as we tighten up ID requirements. So those are the most frequent questions. What other ID do I have? What help do I need? How can I maneuver through these various requirements of different agencies so that I can drive and so that I can have ID to use when I need ID?
Why are DEQ tailpipe emission tests only required in Portland and Medford?
That's part of the Department of Environmental Quality. It monitors air quality throughout the state. And in areas that exceed federal and state levels of carbon dioxide, carbon monoxide, and other emissions, and those areas have to have the testing in order to get the emissions down. And in Oregon, the two areas are Portland and Medford. Portland, because of its size, the metropolitan area has a lot of vehicles. Whereas Medford, it's in that bowl-like valley that traps a lot of atmosphere, and so it tends to have higher emissions if it doesn't have this testing program.
I understand that, but doesn't that give kind of free rein to people in Eugene and other places to emit as much pollution out of their tailpipes as they can?
That's true. However, one on the bright side, though, is that modern vehicles, they emit about 1% of the pollutants that vehicles did about 30 years ago. So even as those older cars are finally headed to, you know, car heaven at the junkyard, we'll see improved air quality even without DEQ testing.
We have time for one more call. We have Keith in Eugene. Keith, welcome to Sunday at Noon.
Thank you. Yeah, I have a... I've had experience with an issue with my driver's license being suspended for reasons unrelated to driving. And that originated with issues with the child support division. And I maintained, even with the district attorney, even before my license was suspended, that would make me unable to earn a living and to be a daddy to my own kids. Those are not only just constitutional rights, but human rights. And then it's further disabled me over several years since then. Now, this has nothing to do with safety. So how does that line up with the DMV's position of safety is the first thing to do, but my rights have been seriously infringed on by taking my license?
Thanks, Keith. Good question. David?
And that is a controversial issue, not just the child support requirement, but any time that there's an attachment of a requirement that's got nothing to do with driving to a driver license, that is a hot debate. It ends up going one way or another. DEQ is a good example. You can't re-register your vehicle and drive it without passing a pollution control requirement, which has nothing to do with driving or supporting the highways. So there actually are very, very few things that are not driving-related that are attached to the driver license. And actually, you could look back at, again, our first topic here. Should proof of citizenship and legal presence in the country be tied to driving safety? That's why it is such a difficult issue. That's why it's not a no-brainer one way or the other. Same thing with attaching child support. The Department of Justice looks at it as a way to motivate people to catch up with their child support payments. Rightly or wrongly, that was accepted by the legislature some years ago. So, it's one of the hot button issues because it is not directly related to driving safety itself.
David House is spokesman for the Oregon DMV. David, thanks for joining us today on Sunday at Noon.
Well, thank you. It was fun.